everyone, and welcome to Police Off the Cuff, Real Crime Stories. I'm your host, retired NYPD Sergeant Bill Cannon, a 27-year veteran of the NYPD. I know all you guys, so many people in the chat have indicated how much they love Barbara Butcher, and I assure you that love is reciprocal. She's an amazing lady. I worked with her when I was in Manhattan North Homicide Squad. I was one of her students at her criminal investigation course and her homicide course when I was in homicide. And not only is she just a woman that has unbelievable amount of knowledge, but she happens to be personable and funny, articulate, all the great things. I could use all kinds of adjectives to describe Barbara, but the proof is in the pudding, as they say. Whenever I have her on this show, the love oozes out of the audience for her. So she has something. And as I told you guys, she has the book that she wrote last year, What the Dead Know, which is apparently doing very well. And she just recently appeared on 3 episodes of Homicide New York that is on Netflix. So if any of you guys haven't seen that, no matter where you are in the world, I'm sure you can get Netflix and you could see Barbara on her episodes talking about what she is the most knowledgeable about. You know, I've been, this case, in a way, it sort of eats at me in one way. And in another way, I'm happy in realizing that this man on the screen is where he belongs. He's in jail. So when you think of it from a law enforcement perspective, what better way to continue to investigate a really serious as it gets, a homicide, when the number one suspect is on ice? He ain't going anywhere, right? I really use my street slang there. He's not going anywhere. Right? He's in jail, and you have him safely tucked away on those other charges. So, but what does that do for us, the general public and the true crime community that is dying, that is asking all these questions that right now there's no answers to? So we can just sort of peripherally dig around and you know, as I spoke about hypothesizing and theorizing, Phil Grimaldi calls it spitballing, putting together educated guesses, which is a lot of investigation, is that. And in hypothesizing, it's a hard word to say, hypothesizing and theorizing, putting investigative minds together to come up with potential conclusions, except the conclusions that we come to right now are incomplete because we're not privy to the evidence. We don't have the case folder. We don't know the results of interviews, right? We don't know the results of the autopsy. That hasn't been released, has it? But the police from early on called this a murder, didn't they? So that's a little bit of an indication. But who is the person that decides that this is a homicide or not? Is it the police? No, it's not. It's the medical examiner. And I know sometimes I feel like I get redundant in some of the things I say, but I don't think you can hear this enough times. There's manner of death and there's cause of death. Manner is homicide, suicide, accidental, natural, or undetermined. So right now, that person called the medical examiner is the person that's going to determine whether or not this is a homicide, right? And I think it's almost, you know, I don't want to say it, but I would say it's somewhat of a foregone conclusion that this is going to be determined. But then we get to cause. What is the cause of death? And that could be blunt trauma, asphyxia, strangulation, stab wound, poison, drug overdose. It could be any of a number of things. So parting it up with the autopsy results, not always, doesn't come out at the same time, because it usually takes 6 to 8 weeks for the toxicology to come back. So that's important in this case also, right? So today, we believe that the homicide occurred on February 26th. Today's the 30th, right? So it's over a month now. So we're in that 4 to 6 week realm, but we're not in the 6 to 8 week targeted realm where we could hope that the toxicology comes back. So all of those pieces of evidence are things that are going to tell the police. And I would say that the police, the detectives working this case, they know the manner of death. And I believe we all sort of know it too, but it hasn't been officially reported by the medical examiner. Sana Elise Hoth Johnson, thank you for the NOK9 super sticker. Thank you so much. Much appreciated. Much appreciate your support of this channel. So folks, hang on to your hats. Hang on to your seats. You're about to enter true crime from a police perspective. And you're about to enter the off-the-cuff zone, the police off-the-cuff zone.
There has to be some common sense.
Yes, sir. They have the car stopped in Tampa Ranch, Michael Biden.
We still don't know who pulled the trigger.
You know, some of the things that have been bothering us in this case is that what we want is a neat package tied up in a bow that can explain what happened to us, but we're not getting it in this case. And what we really want is a clear and concise timeline. And we don't have that either, do we? We don't have a clear and concise timeline. What we have is a birthday party on the 25th of February, right? Do we have the time that party was supposed to start and when it was supposed to end? Do we know exactly when it did start and when it did end? Do we know when Madeline Soto got there and when she left? If she left that party, do we even know that? And these are some of the questions, because putting this timeline together is so important in an investigation. Who was at this party? We want to know who was at this birthday party for Madeline Soto, turning 13. We've all discussed if that was something that was important, that something that could have been the catalyst that led to this savage doing what we think he did. We don't know for sure. All we know is that he had some horrific photographs on his phone depicting horrible things, right? And from that point on, he became suspect numero uno, as they say, suspect number one. And so what are some of the things and some of the investigative tools they use to put it on this guy? Well, creating a timeline, no time in human history have we had more tools to put together a sophisticated timeline than we do now. Cell phones, text messages, GPS, vehicle GPS, video cameras that photograph almost everything, right? Something called geofencing, which can pull up electronic devices in a specific area at a specific time and reveal who's on those electronic devices. Unbelievable technology we have. But the police have all this information, don't they? But guess who doesn't? Again, we don't have all this information, but we know that the police do. So is that making us feel better? I think so. I'm going to bring this up from Court TV. We'll have some pictures explaining this.
Madeline Soto's 13th birthday party was on Sunday, February 25th. The party was at a relative's house, and she was surrounded by family. But one person who wasn't there was her mother, Jen Soto. She was working. Madeline's mother and father were not together. In fact, her dad married another woman a couple of months after she was born. But there was a man living in her house. Her mom's boyfriend, Stephen Stearns. Stearns was at the birthday party. And at some point after the party and before she was supposed to be at school the following day, Madeline was murdered. Stearns is the prime suspect because he was the last known person to be with her, and he is alleged to have hundreds of disturbing photos on his phone of Madeline being sexually abused. Investigators are putting together a timeline. They have gathered surveillance video from the complex where they lived, tracking Stearns' movements. They also have license plate reader information and eyewitness statements, all connected to Stearns and his car. Tonight, we'll take a look at that evidence and identify what's missing and what it means as we continue our investigation into the tragic life and death of Madeline Soto.
So this, all of this information is great. However, TV reporters that also are not privy to the inside information of this investigation, they can conjecture just like we are. But I don't think Vinnie Politan in his career ever investigated a murder. So he's sort of repeating things, but and I'm not putting him down. This is great information. Here I am. We're using it, right? But so many of the things that he just spoke about, the timeline, right? The time stamps. And one of the things that bothers me a lot about this investigation is the fact that Jennifer Soto appears to be lying in her statements, because somehow it aligned with what Stephen Stearns was saying. And one of the statements, of course, was that Madeline was seen by that church at 8:30 and she got out of the car. And also the fact that Jennifer Soto said that she saw Madeline that morning in their house. So that, I find that disturbing, because I don't think that that information is true. So you can come up with a few different hypotheses from that. Is that A, Jennifer Soto is involved, or B, she's somehow intimidated to go against Stephen Stearns and against what he told her. So she's putting it out there as the truth.
And the time that Madeline was supposed to show up at school. And the more you focus in on that actual morning, based on the timeline that's being established, none of it makes sense. It doesn't make sense to me. Something weird was happening. And is it panic? Is it, I don't know what it is. But what I do know is when you try to like put it together in some logical form, some of the actions and things that are timestamped that we know happened that morning, it still is confusing. And it starts because of Stephen Stearns. I mean, his activities that day, suspicious to say the least. Now, we know he's got problems. We know he's been arrested, not charged with the murder, but a prime suspect in the murder, but puts himself as the last known person to be with the victim in this case. And then we know what was on his phone. Hundreds of images of Madeline being sexually abused and him being the abuser. Those are the allegations against him. So that's obviously suspicious, to say the least about it. But just what he was doing that morning, like, why? Why is he up so early? Why is he driving seemingly in and out of the complex? Where is he going? Where did he go? Where was he leaving? Why was he returning? Why is he at the dumpster? Why is he driving back at 8:19 with Madeline in the car when school starts at 9:30? None of this makes sense. And when you look at this timeline, you're trying to figure out, what does it tell us about whether it's the flat tire driving on the other side of it's not even the town. He's in another city. I mean, he's driving 22 miles away to do what? Like, at least Scott Peterson told us, oh, yeah, I went fishing in the bay. Well, we know what he was doing there, but at least he had a story for it. There was never a story from Stephen Stearns about why he's driving around St. Cloud that day.
You know, I just like to say that Stephen Stearns, obviously, Mike Geary, guilty mind, you know, consciousness of guilt. He was cocky about putting the wool over the police detectives because he had thought he did a reset. He did a factory reset on his cell phone. So he thought he was going to be free and clear, and his phone would have been, everything on his phone would have been erased. However, it didn't happen that way, did it? And that's what, on the Wednesday, it would have been the 28th, Wednesday would have been Sunday 25th, Monday 26th, it would have been 28th, yes. He was arrested for horrific images on his phone. So at that point, when he realized the gig was up and he was going to jail, what did he do? He invoked counsel. So therefore, he's not going to tell the police what happened. He's not going to offer that up. After all, folks, this is a death penalty case. This is nothing that he's going to play around with. He can get the death penalty. And, you know, and if he's guilty, hopefully he will. And I was always the picture of his vehicle here, the missing photo. This was from when Madeline was just considered missing. You see the left rear tire with a donut on it, right? I question, and I know, again, the police know the answer to this. Did he have a flat tire, or was that a ruse so that he could use that to put his car and cover himself, taking Maddie's body out of the car and dumping her in the field? Did that give him some cover? And again, I believe that the police know the answers to that. So all of these questions that we have, the vehicle there, and how did, to get back to Jennifer Soto, how did she see her daughter getting dressed for school when at 8:19 her body was seen inside Stephen Stearns' vehicle on video? That's at 8:19. So the timeline doesn't fit, so that she must be lying. And we may all ask, why was she lying? Is she lying because she's part of this? Or was she lying to protect Stephen Stearns? Those are the questions that we cannot answer with the information we have. But I believe the Kissimmee police know the answers to this. And we say it ad nauseum. They're trying to cross their T's and dot their I's. So when they put this case forth, it'll be a slam dunk, if there's such a thing, in the criminal justice field as a slam dunk, case against this guy. So he has no chance. Ann Smith from the chat, she's covering up for him. That's one possibility, Ann. You're 100% right. Kirsten White, I think he had a flat tire from driving through the weeds to dispose of Maddie's body. That's possible. All these things are possible, guy. You know, Pauline Buckles, I saw you asked a question before, and you asked if Barbara Butcher was able to determine the time of death in her explanation. And again, she did. She did not do an examination of the body. She is not on this case. And she based her hypothesis that, no, she could not do that. But she also offered up that this body would have been in decomposition because it would have been dumped there on the 25th and it wasn't recovered till March 1st. So Barbara indicated that the body was left out in the open, depending on the temperature, which it will either speed up or slow down decomposition according to animal activity. So scientifically, you really cannot predict time of death. You can do a guesstimate, but it's not as accurate as other devices. For example, digital, right? Is there text messages? Is there a time, the exact time when Stefan Stearns drove to that location? But again, Madeline, according to Chief Mena, who gave a press conference, Madeline was already dead. So then how can we predict time of death when we don't have all that information, body temperature, decomposition, condition of the body, some of those other indicators that we need? And again, digital evidence is sometimes the strongest indicator of time of death.
And he lives in Kissimmee, and I don't think he has a job. Really suspicious. And what does it mean that he's there at 1 o'clock? And then all this activity in the morning, the dumpster, driving away from the school, driving back into the complex, and then saying that he goes back out. What does it mean? What does it tell us? Tonight, we're going to try to dig a little deeper into all of it to try to make some sense of it, of what it could mean in this case. I mean, my gut reaction is telling me this is just utter panic. Utter panic that you know, things happened. He's not prepared for it. And now he's scrambling. But then you look at the one other thing, like Jen Soto. Why is her story somehow corroborating his story? You know, there's two explanations for it. One, she's being forced to say it, threatened to say it, just parrots whatever he says because he controls her in some way, or she's just flat out lying and covering for him.
You know, that's interesting, except you would expect that once he got arrested and Jennifer Soto was informed of what was on his phone, that at that point, if she had no involvement, that she would have cooperated and given more information. And if she was lying at that point, which, you know, there's a good chance she was, that she would come clean and say what happened. But she's done none of those things. Nancy Browning, he got rid of backpack and computer so mom would think she did go to school. And he had her all day to do what he wanted with Maddie's body. Sick creep. Yes, he is. Janet Ray from the chat. Mom was sure she didn't use her phone or laptop that night, which seems odd since it was her birthday. Just saying. Yeah, that does seem a little bit odd. I think it's also a little bit odd, and some people disagree with me, but that she left her cell phone home. Most kids are, especially 13-year-olds, they're very, very attached to their cell phone. And they would know that they left it at home. And I don't know. I mean, you guys are parents. Is there, are anyone out there, parents of 13-year-olds, that can say, you know, my child would never leave her or his cell phone at home? And if they discovered they didn't have it with them when they were taking a ride to school, what is a kid doing when they're in the car when you're driving them to school? They're usually text messaging or doing something like that on their phone, right? So I find the fact that she left her phone, I don't think that's all that believable either. Raggedy Hobo, if they find her connected in any way, then a charge could be conspiracy to commit murder instead of murder. Raggedy Hobo, you're right, but they're not going to let that cat out of the bag because they didn't file the murder charges yet. And the determination hasn't been put forth by the medical examiner yet. So you're right. Simi Sharp from the chat, in my opinion, I feel like the only way they could have said that before they found her, is it possible, hate to even say it, that he had pictures of her deceased on his phone? You know, Simi Sharp, that's why you're called Sharp. That's a really good possibility. Yeah, that's an outstanding possibility. You're the first person that since I've been covering this case, that raised that very real possibility. Yeah, I think that is a possibility. Erica Olson from the chat, unless they charge the monster, then it should be in the arrest warrant. Well, right now they don't, they haven't pulled the trigger, obviously, on the murder charges because they have enough to put him in prison for the rest of his life. Explore Corp, Pauline Buckles, I wonder if she is lying because at the time she was more concerned about coming across as negligent, that she has often let SS care for Maddie, including taking her to school. See, these are all the questions that we want answers to, but all the questions that we don't have answers to yet, but the police do.
Let's take a listen to Jen Soto, because this... You look at what happened to Madeline. All of this is taking place at her birthday party, right? She's alive at her birthday party turning 13, which leaves the question, when was she murdered? She's celebrating. She's got her birthday dress on. There's people over a relative's house. We think it's grandma's house. There's a cake. There's like everything that's normal, seemingly normal on this day, except one thing. It's not normal. We plan the child's birthday party celebration with relatives on a day when mom can't make it. Like mom's not there, but the alleged sex abuser is there and the rest of the family. Let's take a listen to the interview from WFTV, Jen Soto, again, talking about this is the last time that we know she's alive, the birthday party.
She had a birthday party on Sunday. She had a great time. I couldn't make it because I was working, but she had an amazing time. She was so happy with all her gifts. I told her good night, and yeah, that was it.
Told her goodnight where? Back home? Were you back home and was everyone there? Was she dropped off? Were you talking to her on the phone? I don't know. Is this the last time you talked to your daughter? I just think the description would be a little more specific. I mean, at that point, the body of Madeline hasn't been found. She's a missing child, but still your child is missing. That's never good. Yeah, I told her good night, and that was it. That was it. There was nothing else to it. Nothing else happening. Where's everybody else? Where are you? Did you come back from work yet? Because your mother said you worked late and you're real tired the next morning. So let's go back to the party now, because we do have some video from that party. This is from TikTok, and it's Madeline, and you'll actually get to hear her. It's a short video, but it tells me one thing. When it's a party, right? It's a party, so people take pictures and videos of the birthday girl. Take a look. She seems to me older than what I was thinking from just the images of her. You know, her voice, she just seems more mature. I wonder if that's playing a role in everything that happened to her. She's now growing up. Let me bring in my guests. Joining me in Miami, Florida.
You know, one of the things that we want to know, I apologize, I forgot to flip the switch back on the microphone. One of the things we want to know about the birthday party is, of course, as a investigative tool for the timeline, is it was at the grandmother's house. What time did it start? What time did everyone leave? Those are some of the questions we want to know. And who was there? How many people were there? And as a detective or as a detective boss, I want to interview every single one of those people and to hear from them what happened at this party. Anything different? How was Madeline acting? How is Stefan acting? All of those things are investigative resources we want to know. The grandmother, of course, we want to speak to the grandmother. Did she see anything or hear anything strange going on at the party? And that is so, so, so important to this investigation. So many things could have happened at this party. And again, the timeline wise, we don't believe, I don't believe that the murder occurred at or during or after this party at that location. I believe it must have happened in Madeline Soto's home, Jennifer Soto's home, the home that Stefan Stearns was staying in.
Right side of the picture, you see a reflection. We're going to put a little outline there so you can kind of see where we're drawing your attention to. It looks like a man all the way on the right standing, much larger, with a hat on, it appears. And then to the left of there, it looks like you have a couple of people sitting down. And I was like, well, who else is at this party? Is it just men or is it like a bunch of people? Then we took a look. I got a little tip from Gray Hughes to take a look at the balloons. And if you look in the balloons, wait a minute, there's reflections. You get a much, I think, clearer picture that, hey, there's a bunch of folks there. And they're taking pictures as well. Looks like a guy's got a cell phone going right there. I look on the right-hand side on that balloon. That almost, to me, looks like Grandma. People could disagree, but that the balloon on the right, the balloon on the left, I see a, you know, at least 1, 2, 3, 4, looks like at least 6 people there. So there are things happening. There's people there. Dr. Carol Lieberman, these are people you want to talk to. You want to talk about how was she acting? Was and what was the dynamic? Like, who was there at the end of the party? Who did she leave the party? Did she stay at grandma's? Did Stephen Stearns drive her somewhere? These are the questions that information I think those folks would have that is significant. And I wonder, I've got to think they're all going to volunteer that information.
Well, one would hope, yes, they could have really provide a lot of good information, particularly about the relationship between Madeline and Stephen. You know, did she try to spend a lot of time with him? Did she try to not? Was she like trying to be away from him during the night? Was she talking to other people, you know, other men or, you know, yes, they would have a lot of information. You know what else? Her teachers. I hope that the police are talking to her teachers, all the teachers from age 8 up, you know, to the present, because they really should have and would have, maybe they didn't realize what they were watching, but they would have a lot of information because they would have seen or should have seen, should have realized from the time that she was beginning to be abused, there are signs. I mean, I'm not trying to put it all on the teachers, but there are signs that teachers could have seen, you know, things like, was she very quiet? Was she anxious? Was she depressed? Did she not like to be touched? Did she not like to be too close to people? Did she act out in school? Now, I know her mother said that she had ADHD, and I know that there was some talk about her possibly being on the autism spectrum. So some of these symptoms of abuse could also be symptoms of those disorders. So, you know, of course it's hard to tease these things out, but it certainly is.
So all of that, all of those questions that this PhD is asking there, we spoke about all of those things. We spoke about them on different shows. That's part of what we call victimology, is that you want to do a big background on a victim when anything like this happens. Victimology, simply in the homicide land, is known as the study of the victim. And this psychologist is 100% correct. The police should have went back a number of years and spoken to all of the teachers of Madeline that they could find, that they could drum up and find out if there was anything evident even years ago. Because what we're finding out from our investigation is that we think this could go back at least 5 years to the time when Madeline was 8 years old. So that's why it makes it that much more important that a in-depth victimology is conducted, and so important.
Pretty dead at the time, and that Stephen Stearns moved her body in the early morning hours on that day.
That statement, moved her body in the early morning hours, but moved it from where to where, and what was the purpose? We know where she was found, but what was the purpose in the early morning hours? Let's go back to this timeline, 7:35 on video. We've seen where the cameras are. Stearns is discarding Madeline's backpack and school laptop in the dumpster at the Phoenician Bay Villages complex, okay? That is near the back exit / entrance to the complex. 8:10 a.m., a license plate reader catches Stearns' plates driving away from Hunters Creek Middle School. How far from the school were they? How close were they? That's not clear.
That is so interesting that the license plate reader catches his car at 8:10. What that would indicate to me, because they at 8:19, he's back in the complex and the police see what appears to be inside his car, and they said, this is right from Chief Mena, her dead body. She appeared to be dead. I don't know how they actually made that determination. So could it be that he was intending at that point to dump her body and he panicked and went back to the previous location? This is loading up. I don't know
clear.
Why. Okay.
But that's at 8:10. And we know 9 minutes later, Stearns is returning to Venetian Bay apartment complex and Madeline can be seen in the vehicle. And that's when police believe she is deceased at the time on that video at 8:19. Returning home. Why? What for? And where was he before that? And then later in the day, hours later, between 1 and 2:30, Stearns is spotted in the St. Cloud area. Again, this is like, you know, 17 to 22 miles away, changing a flat tire. And we're gonna go into detail on the flat tire in a minute, but I wanna focus in the next segment, but I wanna focus here on this 7:35, 8:10, 8:19. What's going on? Still with me, the co-host of the Surviving the Survivor podcast, Joel Waldman.
So that is such an interest. That timeline is so interesting because it tells us so much. And I think what it tells us is that he panicked, is that at that point he intended to dump the body. And for some reason, he panicked and came back to the complex and then is seen much later. So where was during that, the missing time between that and 1 o'clock when they said he was changing his flat? And apparently at that time, he must have dumped Madeline in the field. What was he doing and where was he? And that's the unaccounted for time, I believe, that we're all seeing or hearing. And that's what I believe the police know, the answers to all the questions that we're asking. However, we don't know. And there you see the picture of his car on the screen with the donut on the left rear that shows, or he wanted us to believe, that he had a flat tire that he had changed. So all of these things are questions that we don't know the answers to, but be sure that the police do know the answers to these questions. And that's where again, this case is probably going to be as strong as it can possibly be when they bring this case forward to charge Stephon Stearns.
TV interviews ahead of time, because people are going back and looking at those. And she does, in fact, say he dropped her off and then slips and says we. And he does the same thing. So what on earth is going on here? I mean, you have to think, and I hate to say this to a grieving mother, that in one fashion or another, she's complicit, whether she's covering for Stephon Stearns or it's something more sinister. But something just does not sit right, does not smell right. This is a horrific, horrific crime.
You know, the other thing that's baffling here, Gray, is we just saw the video of the dumpster. And I mean, the camera couldn't be like more obvious. It's right there. It's like the camera's in front of me. It's unreal. Like, here's the dumpster cam. Like, do you not see that? Do you not notice that?
Yeah.
It's right there. Boom. Yeah,
I mean, that's one of the things that makes it. Yeah. I guess that's what makes it seem like he is sort of panicking. Something happened.
Yeah, folks, as you could see on the screen, they have the dumpster where he threw the laptop and her backpack, and right to the right on a pole is a video camera. So like, what did this rocket scientist think that he was doing? Like, this was not going to catch him on camera. Just incredible.
Happened. He gets up and does all these things. Now, here's one thing I will tell you. I think I looked up where the license plate readers are. Okay. And one of them that I found was at the intersection of West Donegan Avenue and John Young Parkway, which is that straight long street that goes down that you would take to get down to the main 192 and then go back to the apartments. So it sort of makes sense that at 8:10 that would be there. So I'll show you off the air where that is, then you can update people later.
But of course you're on top of it, Gray. I gave you the 30 seconds and boom, you found this. Okay, stay where you are, everyone. Everyone's staying with us. When we come back, we're going to talk about the
some really good information there. But again, I believe, and I think we all believe, that The police know the answers to all of this stuff, but we do not.
He pulled over on a roundabout that has a cargo shipping container. He was in on the right-hand side heading towards Harmony. He was wearing a green light brown hat backwards. I didn't see anyone else in the vehicle. He was outside the car at the back left tire with a tire iron. Looked like he was changing it, but couldn't say for sure. All this stuff. Seems like it pans out. Got the name of the road wrong. It's Hickory Tree, not Old Hickory Tree. Let's take a listen. Cody Thomas, our producer, was down there and kind of walks us around the area where this flat tire was.
Now, just across the street here in this area, this little divot off of Hickory Road, is where a witness online describes where he saw Stephen Stearns kneeling down, changing a tire that morning of February 26th when Maddie Soto went missing. Now, you can see it's just a little gravel divot. A lot of flat land back here, private farmland. Now, police describe the area they saw that flat tire situation on Old Hickory Road. There's an Old Hickory Road and a Hickory Road. Hickory Road, again, across the street where Madeline Soto's body was found. So there could be a little confusion as far as what witnesses may or may not have saw between the two, that is Hickory Road and Old Hickory Road. But one thing we do know, again, right across the street, and that tree line behind that memorial over the fence is where Madeline Soto's body was found on March 1st.
And one other thing we know is that that back left tire, which was photographed, was changed. That's a spare. That is clear. Ken Jackson.
So that is the tip, of course, that led to them discovering Madeline's body. That very tip is what led to the police discovering Madeline Soto's body. So very, very important information. And then in that tip, he describes Stephen Stearns and what he was wearing and what he was doing.
I'm looking at this whole thing, the way it has played out. It doesn't seem like it's planned out at all. It seems very reactive.
100% with you on that, and with Gray Hughes as well. I'm on his side when it comes to his take on what happened. Look, I think we're trying to compute this and trying to make sense of this when this act was done in a completely irrational way. I don't think Stephen Stearns had any sense of mind at the time. I think he was all over the place, and there'd be absolutely no reason. If you go back to that timeline, 8:10, he drives by Hunter's Creek Middle School. In that case, maybe he's trying to set up an alibi so someone sees him and says, oh, he dropped her off at school. In this case, what upside potential is there for him to get a flat tire, for anyone to see him when he's that many miles away? And that's where they discover the body. There's absolutely no chance he did it on purpose. I think he had a flat tire. It was bad luck, and this might be what ultimately could get him the death penalty if he is charged with murder here.
So I agree. I agree with these guests of Vinnie Politan. I think that Stephen Stearns was totally irrational. He was not thinking clearly. Well, how can we predict the behavior of someone that just killed a 13-year-old girl? Like, what's his behavior going to be after that? What his mindset is to try to get away with it, to try not to get caught. That's his mindset. Folks, this is Police Off the Cuff, real crime stories. If you like real crime, true crime from a police perspective, you're in the right place. And if you're not subscribed to us, go on our YouTube, hit that subscribe button, give us a thumbs up, ring that bell, hit the like button, share us with your friends and your family. If you want to contribute to us, we have a Patreon with three different levels, and we also have a YouTube channel memberships with five different levels. And we appreciate all our fans, our friends, our subscribers who make this show what it is and contribute to this show. Christina Carson, see, I can't find any words to describe him, but he may have covered this abuse for 5 to 6 years. He knew how to hide things. Something happened when Jen got home. You know, the real, of course, disturbing thing to all of this, and this whole case is extremely disturbing, but it's also that The disturbing thing is that all this abuse was going on before this even happened. And of course, the murder is absolutely horrific. But the fact that this little girl, from the time she was 8 years old, she was putting up with this horrific, horrific, horrific abuse. And it ended in the worst way possible. But who could have saved this little girl? Who could have saved her from this monster? And you always hope and think that you could, or you would recognize something like this, and you could have come to the aid to help her.
Fox 35 News at 5.
We are now confident that she is dead.
The search for 13-year-old Maddie Soto takes a devastating turn as the prime suspect sits behind bars.
Stefan, where's Maddie? Did you hurt her?
Fox 35 was the only station there today when Stefan Stearns was transferred to the Osceola County Jail.
Where was Maddie last seen? Why aren't you helping her mother and her family?
The sheriff now believes Maddie was never dropped off at school on Monday.
We believe she was already dead at that time.
Tonight, Fox 35 is live with team coverage on the search for Maddie Soto's body.
And we begin with some breaking news at this hour. That search has law enforcement walking through the woods near St. Cloud at this hour. This is the view from Skyfox flying high over the scene on Noltree Road near Old Hickory Road.
Right now, the sheriff thinks the key to finding Maddie's body is by talking to people who saw this car on Monday that was in the area where they're searching now. Thanks for joining us. I'm Hannah McKenzie.
And I'm John Brown. Detectives believe Maddie Soto's body was in the car and Stefan Stearns was driving around. And now they need your help. All right, take a good look once again. Here's the car. It's a silver 2010 Lincoln. Stearns was seen driving it in two areas between 1 and 2:30 p.m. near St. Cloud in Osceola County. I check out the map of the locations here. Reports show that he was on 192 and Old Hickory Tree Road and Noltree Road and Old Hickory Road. They believe that he had a flat tire somewhere around there and was changing it in that area. Fox 35's Manny Martinez is in the alert center with a look at the search today. Manny.
John, this video that you're about to see showing the search, a massive law enforcement present between multiple agencies. It is something to look at because you see just how thick some of that brush is that investigators are combing through. So let's show you from Skyfox one more time. And we've gotten confirmation just within the past 20 minutes. And this video is that fresh as well, that it is the city of St. Cloud, as well as Kissimmee, the Orange County Sheriff's Office and the Osceola County Sheriff's Office. They are the four agencies that were out there investigating. They are looking for clues, looking for the body of 13-year-old Madeline Soto. And then they tell us that they will also be doing this until they find her body.
This, of course, was prior to them finding Madeline's body. And you could see how massive the search was, how many agencies, police agencies were involved, but also what they knew, things that they knew that we did not know prior to them finding the body.
My detectives from the Kissimmee Police Department met with Madeline's mother, and they had to tell her the very devastating news that although we have not found Madeline, we are now confident that she is dead.
Sheriff John Mina described the grisly timeline as best he could, saying deputies have proof of suspect Stefan Stearns trying to cover his tracks.
We have video evidence that shows Stefan Stearns discarding items in a dumpster in that apartment complex in Kissimmee at 7:35 on Monday, February 26. Detectives later recovered Madeline's backpack and her school-issued laptop from that dumpster. At 8:19, we have evidence that shows Stefan Stearns returning to the complex and Madeline was visible in that vehicle. We believe she was already dead at that time.
They say their top priority is still finding Maddie. Our cameras were rolling this morning as deputies transferred Stefan Stearns to the Osceola County Jail.
Where was Maddie last seen? Why aren't you helping her mother and her family? This is a little girl. Help them find Maddie. Where is Maddie?
And the sheriff thinks that answer will be found in Kissimmee, which is why Orange County is now turning over their investigation to Kissimmee Police.
And of course, the Orange County Sheriff's Office, all of our support personnel will be available and will be still be assisting in this investigation.
Now, jail officials say Stearns will face a judge tomorrow morning. And meanwhile, they're asking anybody with any information that may lead to the recovery of Maddie to please give the Orange County Sheriff's Office or Crime Line a call. We're live in Orlando. Matt Trezza, Fox 35 News.
Thanks, Matt. Maddie was a student at Hunters Creek Middle School. Her classmates there are now grappling with this latest update. Fox 35's Randy Hildreth joins us live from outside the school tonight. And Randy, we heard there's going to be a prayer vigil there.
Yeah, so many people just impacted by the devastating news that we learned today.
So, folks, you can imagine Maddie's classmates, other 12 and 13 year old kids, the devastating nature of this, of reporting this to some young kids. You know, your classmate was murdered. I mean, how could that, how could they understand that? And how do they move on from that? You know, just an absolutely horrific situation. So, you know, a lot of you guys asking questions in the chat, how did the police know? And this is a question that really hasn't been answered yet to anyone's satisfaction. How did the police know that when Stephon Stearns brought her back to that complex, the condominium complex, at 8:19, she was visible in the vehicle? How did the police know that she was deceased at that point? I think there's other, clearly there must be other evidence besides video of them seeing the body, which would be inconclusive. Optimistic Maya, yeah, you're asking the same exact question I was trying to answer. I still don't understand how the police are so sure that Madeline was deceased when they saw her in his car. Could her body have been in rigor mortis at the time? It's a terrible thought. You know, Optimistic Maya, someone in the chat suggested, and it was a very good guess, could Stephon Stearns have had images on his phone of Madeline already dead? And is there, because it was a cell phone, was it time-stamped in some way? That is a very, very good possibility. So Topaz, he for sure took pics. Well, I'm not sure, but, you know, there's a possibility. And could that be the evidence that the police have? Rochella Prenzo, seems like there's always other evidence that is held from the public. Rochella, in this case, a ton of it, because they're obviously not talking. Code Gray here, I think her death was recorded during an assault. Well, Code Gray here, we don't know that for sure. We don't know. Nikita Gesperacht, I can't say. Agnostic One, sadly, I used to, but this essay in sex trafficking and human trafficking, etc., is out of control. And why? Because these predators are too good at shifting and covering up. Yeah, it's these situations are absolutely horrific. Sybil Bergeron, but they wouldn't have guessed, so you are spot on, Bill. Sybil, I agree. I think they know, of course, the police to say. And the language that the chief Mena used, I didn't love the language he said. We're confident that she was dead at that point. Just probably a poor choice of words. We think, perhaps, you know, but saying we're confident, that's usually used in reporting something that's positive and not so negative. Someone in the chat asked the question before. This could be a death penalty case because the underlying felony done against a child in the commission of a murder makes this case eligible for the death penalty. So yes, that's what makes this case eligible for the death penalty, that the underlying felony, all the SA videotaped and pictured on his phone, is what makes it the underlying felony that makes Stephon Stearns, if he in fact did this, eligible for the death penalty. Rita Cooley, I think she either looked gray in the car, was slumped and he repositioned her, or he had her partially covered with her feet or legs only showing. We don't know the answer to that. Tracy Taylor, how did mom not know he took her body back to the house? What time did he leave again? Because he couldn't leave her body in the car. Tracy Taylor, those are all the questions that we don't know. We absolutely do not know. I'm amused. Logical deduction. When the update regarding his phone, they also mentioned that they were sure she was deceased. The sicko had pictures. I'm amused. I'm believing that. I'm starting to really believe that also, that this sicko probably did take pictures. Lutina B, autopsy and tox won't be made public until hearing Florida law for minors. Yeah, but I think that the autopsy don't have to give in-depth results to the public. They can just say it's been determined to be a homicide. I think that they can release that. We don't know. We're guessing a lot of things. Teresa Dill, it was said he wasn't living there at the time. Nevertheless, did they search his home and gather any video from that area? Teresa Dill, so many investigative steps that the Kissimmee police have taken, we're not privy to. We know that they conducted a search warrant on Jennifer Soto's home. We know without a doubt they've conducted a search warrant on Stephon Stearns' car. We know, of course, they processed the crime scene. We know, of course, there was an autopsy on Madeline Soto. We know that we're waiting for toxicology. So all of those steps, yes, we know, but we don't know the answers to all of those other investigative steps that no doubt the Kissimmee police have undertaken. I'm trying to see. Seth Rogers, only parent that is truly innocent, working books on ground to help. God bless you, Seth Rogers. Okay, I'm not sure who you're speaking to. Robert Lavalle, how do the non-guilty family members carry on from this kind of crime to one of their youngest members? Very difficult, Robert Lavalle. Just absolutely horrific crime. And we're talking about, imagine if the possibility exists that Jennifer Soto has no involvement in this, which I find in my police experience, I find it very difficult to believe that could be the case, because I just think she had to know about this. That's my opinion. Could I be wrong? I've been wrong before, but I think in this case that the lies bother me, The lies bother me, and the fact that she was comforting him during this press conference where he tried to give an Oscar-winning performance, and she was comforting him. It should have been the other way around. He should have been comforting her. Tracy Taylor, how did mom not know he took her body back to the house? What time did he leave again? Because he couldn't leave her body in the car. Tracy, those are the million-dollar questions we do not know the answers to. And I'm amused. Logical deduction. When did the update regarding his phone? They also mentioned that they were sure she was deceased. Sicko had pictures. I already read that. I'm amused. There's so many investigative things that the police have conducted that we are not privy to. We do not know the answer to. Janet Coleman, mother called him to give her child a ride to school. Come in. Something ain't right. Come on. Yes, something's not right. I think that I agree with you. I totally agree with you. Agnostic One, someone gave me a website to know how many sex offenders are in my area. I wish I didn't see it. Yeah, sometimes you know things like this, and power, knowledge is power, but sometimes it makes you paranoid too, to know all about those things. Lieutenant Peter Pranzo, Harlem Raiders, agree, Bill, just too long, too much. He had to know. Yeah, Lieutenant, it's you have the police instincts. All they never go away, you know. Tattoo Gale, 6 years, mom had no idea. Never caught him bedroom creeping ever. They didn't live in a mansion. Yeah, I find it hard to believe. Natty Lady, my daughter turns 13 in a week or so. I can't even imagine losing her family being the reason behind it. Yeah, absolutely ridiculous. From the chat, Melly Michelle, I think he streamed or took video of him hurting her that night. And something went wrong, so police saw the video. Mama's guilty too. She knew and neglected her daughter. Melly Michelle, you know, all of these are, I'm not going to say they're not possibilities, but we can't put, they're not, we can't put them out there as facts because we don't know the facts. I'm amused from the chat. I believe the mother had guilty knowledge, meaning perhaps she had seen something on his phone of other children. Then when her daughter came up missing, she distanced herself from that knowledge. I'm amused. That's totally 100% a possibility. I think that that absolutely could be the case. Folks, if you're looking for a fantastic defense attorney in the New York metropolitan area, then Joe Murray is your man. Joe's a retired NYPD police officer and a fantastic defense attorney. You can reach him on his cell phone at 718-514-3855. Email him at joe@jmurray-law.com. Go on his website, jmurray-law.com. Not only is Joe a fantastic defense attorney, but a huge supporter of the Police Off the Cuff podcast. So, you know, the coverage on this case, there's many people have been covering this case. And what we all have in common right now is that there's many answers that we don't know the answer to. There's many things that we don't know the answer to. And we can just do what we call a hypothesis or, you know, an educated guess. Someone just asked in the chat, didn't Maddie never sleep alone? That's what the grandmother reported. So all of these things are things that the police know that we don't know. Gigi Levallois, this is so tragic. I cried when I saw the photo taken by a school friend's mother who actually lived in the same apartment complex. Both girls were about 8 to 10 years old with cute dresses and smiles. It absolutely is a shame, and we're going to stay on this case till the very, very end, till the answers that we don't have right now come in, and that we will have answers for you. But this case, of course, is tragic, so horrific and so tragic, and all we can do is pray for the soul of Madeline Soto and pray that persons responsible for this are convicted and punished within the full extent of the law. Folks, I'm Bill Cannon from Police Off the Cuff, Real Crime Stories. I want everyone to have a wonderful weekend, a wonderful Easter, and I'll see you very soon. Have a great day, and God bless.